You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
All right, hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Carcino.
We welcome in one of our most tenured third Pelton brothers, our foremost cheerleader out there on the internet, who has now become a standout Seahawks writer in his own right for The Athletic Seattle. Welcome back to the pod, Ben Baldwin. Okay, here's what we're doing today. We're going to pick NFL win totals for teams in the 2018 season. Last year, we did this at our live show with Danny Kelly, The Ringer, and Danny did so well, he completely destroyed us, that we absolutely could not invite him back this year.
Yeah, Danny did great. It was very impressive stuff.
Especially for someone who did not know how they work beforehand.
In the last year, he went from never having played fantasy football to hosting a fantasy football podcast. So congrats to Danny.
At this rate of replication and learning, he's going to be just owning the entire internet within a few years here. So good luck with, we welcome our new Ringer Seahawks trader overlord. But anyways, we'll have Ben this year fill in and be the third person to help us do over-unders.
Hi, thanks for having me. And I realized like 10 minutes before the pod that Danny did do amazing last year. So I apologize to the listener for inevitably failing to live up to Danny. So with all that said,
they're expecting regression to the mean.
Yeah, I guess that's not going to work for me. So I should already concede to Danny here.
In case the listener is not aware of how this works, Vegas, in this case, we're taking the lines from the Westgate Superbook Las Vegas, which is kind of considered the preeminent sports book in Las Vegas. They will set a win total. You can either bet that the team will win more games than that, go over, or fewer games than that, go under. And occasionally, I guess, you could hypothetically push.
Can you explain the half game mark?
Yeah, most of these projections, although not all of them, a surprising number of even games projections, but for the most part, you'll put it at between two win totals so that the team either has to go over or under. And sadly, I'm pretty sure, I'd have to double check this, but I'm pretty sure ties do not count as half a win here, sadly. So it's not 12 and a half if you think the Seahawks are going 12-3-1. All right, let's start out with the Arizona Cardinals, a line of 6 wins this season. Ben, what do you think?
Arizona's hard because they're one of the teams where their line is so out of whack with what the analytical sites think, like Football Outsiders or Pro Football Focus. So I'm going to go with the numbers nerds and say over here.
I'm also taking it over here. We did this one during the live show as the Cardinals are in the NFC West. I mean, the one big concern here is Sam Bradford's history of missing time due to injury and the fact that Josh Rosen does not seem real ready to win games is his backup. But as long as Sam Bradford is healthy the majority of the season, I like the over here.
Solid under.
Interesting. Okay.
Same with the live show?
I don't really remember.
I'm going to try to pick the same as I did at the live show.
But it's good if we have a little bit of disagreement here. The Atlanta Falcons, a line of 9.5 wins coming off their 10 wins last season.
I'm going to go over. I think they're pretty good.
I'm going to go slight under here. I mean, I also think they're pretty good, but 9.5 wins is a lot. They'd have to get back to 10. And their Pythagorean record was more like 9-7 last year. And Football Outsiders is pretty low on them coming into the season. Their DVOA projection calls for an average of 8.1 wins.
That's crazy. I'm going over.
Okay, 2 of 3 overs there on the Falcons. The Baltimore Ravens with a line of 8.5 wins.
I'll take the over.
I'm going to go a slight over here, I think, as well. They won 9 games last season and had a really good Pythagorean, good point differential, Pythagorean expectation of about 10.5 wins.
Going under on this one.
Wow, you're just contrarian today. Oh, wait, I'm contrarian on the last two, I guess. You and I have not agreed on any of them, though, so far, which is good for the listener.
Let's take a second and recognize the last time the three of us did predictions, this was about who would make the Seahawks roster. And since Kevin's not going to rub it in our faces, I'm going to acknowledge that Kevin got more right than Tristan and I. So congratulations there.
I was right to be pessimistic about the Seahawks getting rid of all their good players.
That's not entirely true. I mean, the Seahawks did get rid of all their good players, but it's not that you were pessimistic. There are a couple where we agreed on things.
No, I did. I didn't call all of them. I think I won by like one player or two. I think it was like 23 to 22 to 21, right?
So it depends. If you count Cam Chancellor as on the Seahawks, then Tristan and I tie for winning. But I counted him as not on the Seahawks. So I have Kevin winning. So that's how close it was. It comes down to how you classify Cam Chancellor.
Clearly not on the Seahawks. I think we can all agree.
Should be on the roster. That we should listen back to the tape. This is important, people.
All right, I'll see what I can do on this. I can't do it live during the show. Okay. The Buffalo Bills, who have just named Nathan Peterman their starting quarterback, with a line of 5.5 wins coming off last year's 9.
The whole AFC East is so hard because they're all so bad, but they have to play each other. So it just depends on who you think is going to end up with these wins between Buffalo, Miami, and the Jets. But I think Buffalo is kind of even in a tier by themselves. So I think I'm comfortable taking the under on them.
That just feels like too much of a regression for Buffalo. I mean, if you're assuming it's so many, because they won 9 games last year, right?
They did, although with a Pythagorean expectation of 6.4 wins.
Well, still, that would be over. But I mean, if you're giving Tyrod Taylor credit for 4 wins, that seems kind of high to me because the roster is relatively similar otherwise. I'm going over on the Bills.
Wow, and again, we are disagreeing because I'm taking the under here. This is outstanding. This is great. Usually we agree way too much. The Carolina Panthers with a line of 8.5 wins.
I'll take the under. Their division is very hard. I think everyone on their offensive line has been injured, and Cam Newton basically has had one good season.
Football Outsiders is bearish on the Panthers' chances. A 7.5 win projection coming off 11 last year with a Pythagorean expectation of 9 wins. So I'm going under.
I'm also going under. This would be one. I had seen that at 9. I was looking at the Bovada odds going into this, and at 9, I'm especially under. 8.5 is a little bit harder, but this does not feel like even a 9-win team.
A 9 you would have made it your lock?
I might still make that a lock. Okay. Oh, by the way, then we can make things locks. It doesn't actually mean anything, but it makes you feel good about it if you have a strong opinion.
The Chicago Bears, fresh off their trade for Khalil Mack, with a line of 7.5 wins this season.
This is hard because we have no idea if their quarterback is any good, and they also have Green Bay and Minnesota and Detroit in their division. So even with Khalil Mack, if they have a good defense, if their schedule is really hard and their quarterback's not that great, then it's hard to see them with a winning record or even hitting 8 wins. So I think I'll take the under on them.
I'm also going under here. I think there's a long history of these like much ballyhooed defensive acquisitions. I think of when Sue went to the Dolphins and people thought that he was going to like really turn things around, and he didn't make that big of a difference.
He ruined one season for the Seahawks.
Yes. And then especially the fact that Mac is, you know, I mean, not that he needs a lot of time in the system necessarily, but the fact that he's getting there with a week of practice before the start of the season, I like the under here.
They're also adding Roquan Smith in the linebacking core, but they have a bad quarterback. It's kind of crazy. What was the line? 7.5?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they have to get to 8 wins in that division. That seems crazy to me. This is a definite under.
All right, all 3 of us agreed on the under there. The Cincinnati Bengals with a line of 7 wins.
This is one I really have no feel for, so I'm just going to say under for no reason at all.
I'm going to take a slight over here. The 7.4 projection from Football Outsiders. Definite like things fall apart in Cincinnati potential this year, but I think also a reasonable chance of them getting day wins.
Yeah, I think this is kind of like the Bengals are like a fantasy player. I mean, maybe even similar to AJ Green or something, like Larry Fitzgerald or something. You've had them for so many seasons. You're not excited about them in any way, but they will find a way to get to 8 wins.
They're going to score 8 points for you every single week, yes. But never more. Never fewer.
There's nothing sexy about the Bengals in the way that there would be for like the Jets or the Bears or something, but I'm going over for the Bengals.
Well, speaking of the Tyrod Taylor effect, the Cleveland Browns, fresh off 0 wins last season, 1 in the last 2 seasons combined, did have a 3.3 Pythagorean expectation last year. Project their line set at 6 wins this year.
Yeah, so this one... I think like most people, I like the roster and I'm terrified of their coaching. So that's the biggest thing that makes me skeptical about their over, but I really do like Tyrod, and if he ends up getting replaced at some point in the season, Baker Mayfield. So I guess if I went under on Cincinnati, then going over on Cleveland would make sense since they're in the same division. So I'll take the over.
Yeah, I'm going under here. I saw enough of Todd Haley and Greg Williams on Hard Knocks.
I'm going to have to go under on that one too. It's just too many wins to add.
All right, the Dallas Cowboys, led by Ben's beloved Dak Prescott, with a line of 8.5 wins.
I'll take the over. I think Washington and the Giants probably will not be very good, so they might be able to pick up some wins there. And Dak Prescott is pretty good when his offensive line is there, which is actually a pretty big question mark this year. And he doesn't have receivers, so I'm kind of second guessing this now, but I took the over, so I'm going to stick with it.
I'm going an over here.
Are you? I thought we would all be in agreement here. I'm going an under. I would consider this maybe even like a near lock.
I mean, that's certainly, it's one of the places where we've seen the most action on the under. One of the things you can look at is, you know, the odds adjust, even though the win total doesn't necessarily adjust. And now it is much more expensive. You have to, you pay 100 to win 120 on the over, and you pay 140 to win 100 on the under.
Surprising, given that the Cowboys are a national team, so you would assume that there'd be more money on the over 14.
And given that they won 9 games last year, despite the Ezekiel Elliott suspension and Tyron Smith's absence during that stretch. The Denver Broncos, who we've already talked about as the Seahawks week one opponent, with a line of 7 wins.
This is pretty hard. I wouldn't be surprised if they got 7 wins exactly, so I guess I will take the under just because I like most of the teams in their division better than them, with the exception of Oakland, which we'll get to.
Yeah, I think we're in the same spot here. I also feel like, I mean, their Football Outsiders projection is right at 7 wins, so this is pretty spot on, but I'm going to take a slight under here.
The AFC West is a tough division to really understand, aside from what I know is that Oakland is going to be terrible. Which maybe we can just all mark that as an under. I don't really have a strong feel for how Denver will be. I was talking with a Viking fan yesterday who said that Case Keenum was the answer, who was convinced that Case Keenum was the answer at quarterback, and that made me a little bit more scared about week one for the Seahawks. Still, though, I like the Chiefs roster and the Chargers roster better. I'm going to have to go under.
Detroit Lions with a line of 7.5 wins coming off 9 last season.
For Detroit, I will take the under here. They're fine, and there's 2 good teams in their division, and they're fine. So it'd be hard for them to not have a losing record, I think.
I'm going over. I think they feel very much like an 8-8 team to me.
I'm going over also. It seems like the Lions are able to scrape their way to 8 wins every season.
The Green Bay Packers with a line of 10 wins.
I'm going to take the under here. Aaron Rodgers hasn't been like amazing since 2014. Their defense hasn't been very good for a while, and the Vikings are in their division, and they lost Jordy Nelson. So there's a lot of things that make me not super optimistic about them, and 10 is a really high total. So, right. If they got less than that, if Aaron Rodgers got hurt, which he has in the past, then it wouldn't take much to not hit that.
I mean, I think 9.5 would be a lot tougher call for me, but at 10, I am also under.
So they'd have to get to 11 wins.
Yeah.
In the same division as the Vikings. I'm going over for the Packers.
You said that like it was a question.
It's not a confident over. I mean, I think they'll be at 10 or 11 wins. It's just flip of the coin, basically.
All right, the Houston Texans getting Deshaun Watson back from injury with a line of 8.5 wins.
I'll take the over. Their division is bad. Deshaun Watson seems pretty good, and his touchdown rate is extremely unsustainable, but even with some regression there, the Titans and Colts are just not good teams, and I doubt the Jaguars will be as good as they were last year, so I think them getting to 9 wins is pretty reasonable.
I'm more skeptical on Watson coming off of injury, and we've had a long run of J.J. Watt injuries here. I don't know if you can count on him playing 16 games at this point, and I think those things are both necessary for this to be a better than 500 team.
Yeah, I'm going under also. I mean, another division. I think the entire AFC, maybe aside from the Patriots winning the East, is going to be pretty hard to pick. You could order these four teams to me in almost any way, and I wouldn't be shocked about the finish. But I do think that the Texans, all the teams are going to require luck, but I think the Texans, more than anybody else, will require that injury luck to get to 9 wins.
Indianapolis Colts, with our beloved Andrew Luck at quarterback, back at quarterback, I should say, a line of 7.5 wins.
So this one's really interesting. If you think Andrew Luck will go back to being what he used to be, regardless of how you feel about what he used to be, it'll still be a huge upgrade over what they had. So the kind of question mark is that he like basically never threw a pass more than 10 yards past the line of scrimmage during preseason. So is this because they were easing him into it? Is this because of their play calling? Or is this because of an actual limitation about what he can do? And there's no real way to know the answer to that, but I think the likelihood of him getting back to health and how not great the other teams in the division are make this, I feel comfortable taking the over here.
What about Christian Michael now?
They have a lot of ex-Seahawks, right? They have Glowinski and Jamarcus Webb. Maybe Robert Turbin is still there.
I'm going over just for Christian Michael because he did nothing wrong.
All right, I'm taking the under here. I'm more worried about Andrew Luck's health, I think, than you two are. The Jacksonville Jaguars, fresh off last year's run to the AFC Championship game with a line of 9 wins.
I was pretty convinced by the Football Outsiders chapter about why they're not going to hit that, so I'm going to take the under. I'm trying to remember what the reasons were, but it was like they were good at things that weren't sustainable, and I can't remember what those things were, which is terrible podcast material, but take it from me. The under is going to be the right bet here.
Having Blake Bortles at quarterback is one of those things, I'm sure.
The main things would be turnovers, probably
right.
Sustainable. The fact that
it was turnovers, and their defense just never had any injuries.
Yes.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it probably is a relatively young defense. But defenses in general aren't as consistent year to year as offenses, right?
That is also correct, according to Football Outsiders research.
Which to me is probably the reason to go under here. You'd be putting a lot of faith in the progression of Blake Bortles to go over, I think.
I'm going to go under and make this a lock.
Wow!
Yeah. There you go.
A lock for the Jaguars.
A lock!
Wow!
Okay, Kansas City Chiefs. I'm taking a lot of unders. I may continue to do so for a while.
Just wait until Jalen Ramsey listens to this podcast.
No. I mean, Mina Kimes may pass it along. He may have listened to last week's episode for Mina. You never know after her great feature.
I actually do know that Jalen Ramsey did not.
For the record. You can't know that.
Look, maybe he's a fan of Taco Time. Who knows?
All right, the Kansas City Chiefs with a line of 8.5 wins for first-year starting quarterback Patrick Mahomes.
It's so hard to do a line for a team that you haven't really seen their quarterback play. So we know the one thing we know about them is that their defense is pretty bad, and their offense was pretty good last year with a different quarterback. So balancing those two things is pretty tough. I guess I'll take the over and not feel great about it, but just because of I just really want to emphasize how low I am in Oakland. So I'm going to take the over on all the other teams in their division.
Outstanding. Yeah, Football Outsiders only has 7.6 wins, but I think I have a lot of faith in Andy Reid to be able to get a team to in the regular season. So I'm going to take the over here as well.
Definitely going over on the Chiefs. I mean, we don't know a ton about Pat Mahomes, but given Andy Reid's history with quarterbacks and confidence, and naming him as their starter early in the offseason, I think you have to feel relatively confident. Of all the new quarterbacks, Pat Mahomes probably more than anybody in the league.
So, Ben, can we mark you down then for an over for the other AFC West team, the LA Chargers?
So, I guess I lied. I'm going to take the under here because so their line is 9.5. I think they'll be a better team than a 9-win team, but I don't think they'll actually win more than 9 games. And this might be reading too much into the past where they're just exceptionally bad at close games. And it's probably random, but if a team does that year over year over year, then maybe it's not, maybe there's something to that. So it's hard for me to place a bet that says the LA Chargers are going to win 10 games. So I'm going to take the under.
They also are one of the teams that has the biggest discrepancy from their Football Outsiders projection this year, which is just 7.9 wins. So I am also an under here.
Yeah, I'm going to go under. That's a lot of wins. I mean, they'll probably win 9. It's a lot of wins to expect from the Chargers.
They've also lost 2 players to injury since Football Outsiders made their projection. So I'm sure if it were made now, it'd be even lower. So the under is probably the right call.
It's kind of the same story with the Chargers every year. Like that exact statement that you made, the projection probably wouldn't have been as high last year, or the over-under probably wasn't as high.
Yeah, the over-under, I think the projection was probably possibly higher last year.
But the having lost 2 players since Football Outsiders Almanac came out, a team that's underachieved at the end of games, it's like the Chargers are always the same.
But they did actually win 9 games last year. You've got to give them credit for that. That is true. The LA Rams with a line of 10 wins coming off last year's 11-win NFC West winning season.
I might be the only one on this, but I'm going to take the over. A lot of this depends on injuries, and they've been one of the healthiest teams in the past couple of years. So if that
not just one continue, of the healthiest team for true. Football Outsiders adjusted games yeah. lost.
So if that doesn't continue, especially on the offensive line, this might look kind of silly, but they just have so much talent, and I'm a believer in Sean McVay, at least for now. So with it being 10 and not 10.5, then I think the over is okay.
I also took the over on this on the live show.
Pretty sure I went under on the live show. Pretty sure I feel strongly about it.
How much do you remember by that point of the live show?
Got a little bit hazy, but I know my feelings are strong that I think that the Rams are... I mean, the other NFC West teams... What did Football Outsiders have to say about the Rams this year?
9.5 projection. It is the best in the NFC West, but perhaps not quite as dominant. And Football Outsiders notably much lower on another team in the NFC West that we'll get to in a minute here.
Yeah, the Football Outsiders really likes the plexiglass principle. So this is the something that Bill James coined that says teams that improved a lot from one year to the next tend to regress some after that. And that was basically the entire Rams chapter. It said we should be skeptical about them continuing to improve on what they did last year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the largest offensive turnaround in NFL history, probably not going to be entirely sustainable.
Yes.
But I think the defense is better.
Why do you think the defense is better?
Because they added Dominican Sue.
And Marcus Peters.
And Aqib Talib. Other than that, though, I don't see any reason to blame. And it's year...
The list of names that the Rams added, it's always scary.
And it's year 2 under the Wade Phillips, in the Wade Phillips system. Like, they were learning a new system last year. They converted from a 4-3 to 3-4. So I think that the offense will regress significantly to the mean, but the defense will be improved, and that will make up for it. Yeah, that's all fine. The Seahawks will be able to block all those guys, no problem. the one who injured Russell Wilson and the one we're constantly terrified of injuring Russell Wilson. No worries. I mean, their ends are a bit of an issue, I guess. You could say that.
They also lost Robert Quinn. They lost at least one notable linebacker, right? I
mean, Alec Ogletree?
Maybe that's what I
was thinking. He was notable, but not actually good.
Yeah, I was going to say. Fine, notable. Miami Dolphins with a line of 6.5 wins.
I think I took the under for the Bills, and I guess, I'll take the over for them, too. 6.5 is pretty low, and they might have Tannehill back, who's kind of okay. And since it's 6.5, I guess I'll take the over. Sure.
Agreed on all of that 7.5 win projection from Football Outsiders.
I feel like the Dolphins have a chance to be in first pick territory.
I mean, yeah, when your line is 6.5 wins, you certainly have a chance at that.
I'm going under for the Dolphins, and I think that they're going to be the bottom of the AFC East.
Below Buffalo. Interesting.
What's the case for Miami being below Buffalo?
I mean, Buffalo made the playoffs last year. Like, I understand that they were lucky, but it's still a relatively talented team overall.
Again, starting quarterback, Nathan Peterman. Yeah. I hear he did look good in the preseason. That was the general consensus, right?
Yep.
There you go. That's all that matters.
Who is Miami's backup quarterback right now?
Is Matt Moore not there anymore?
I feel like he isn't. Yeah, David Fales and they may have picked up someone over the weekend.
Did they have Luke Falk and released him and he signed somewhere else?
I think that's what happened, unless they were the ones who picked up Luke Falk after he was released. One of those two happened. All right, Minnesota Vikings with a line of 10. I mean, Luke Falk has not played this season, guys. Minnesota Vikings with a line of 10 wins coming off of last year's 13.
Pretty sure I took the under on every other team in that division, so I probably have to take the over here. I think Kirk Cousins is probably a better quarterback than Case Keenum. He probably won't play better than Keenum did last year because Keenum was actually amazing somehow. But their defense is good. They have a lot of talent on with their receivers. Maybe their injured offensive lineman will come back, so I'll take the over.
Even though Football Outsiders is relatively low on them, has them projected for just 9.2 wins, I'm also going to take a slight over here.
Go over and shed a single tear for Sheldon Richardson.
New England Patriots with a line of 11 wins.
Yeah, when we were talking about heralded defensive players who switched teams, somehow Sheldon Richardson never got brought up.
I don't know if he's that old. Nobody traded 2 first-round picks for him.
Luckily. I'm glad the Seahawks did not do that.
Yes, thank goodness. And Khalil Mack actually got extended when he got traded to his new team.
Yeah. Okay, right. That was our first sigh. There will be more. I'm going to take the over. I don't think they will win fewer than 10 games. So if they win 10, they would push, and then you would win if they go over. So I'm going to take
11.
The over.
They gotta win 11.
Oh, that was Minnesota. I just did Minnesota again. I replace every word in that sentence with all the Minnesotas with New England's, and then same logic there. So I'll take the over for them too.
I'm going the over. Don't bet against the machine.
I was looking at their roster yesterday, and if you take, granted, you're taking out maybe the best quarterback of all time, if you take out Tom Brady, it's a bad roster. Like, top to bottom, it is not, they have one of the worst rosters in football. You're expecting a lot from them having an easy schedule and having Tom Brady, and then Gronk, basically. It's like a team that's based upon 3, maybe 4 players.
Yeah, you're betting on Gronk staying healthy most of the season, and Brady staying healthy the entire season.
But they probably have 6 wins in division. I mean, I think there's a little bit of, like, there's potential for them to have, like, a 10-6 season and limp into the playoffs, but I think it's just too easy for them. I still have to go over.
New Orleans Saints with a line of 9.5 wins after winning 11 last season.
I'm going to take the over. I think they're a good team. They probably should have won that playoff game against the... Wait. Oh, yeah. I was thinking of the wrong game. They really should have won that playoff game against the Vikings.
Yeah.
And Drew Brees is really good. Their defense is fine. Mark Ingram being suspended for 4 games doesn't really matter, so I'll take the over, even though their division is pretty good.
That was a sly running backs don't matter there. I'm also over. I think this is pretty close to I think 9.5 is really fair for them, but I lean slightly over.
Yeah, definitely over on this one.
New York Giants, a line of 7 wins coming off of 3 last year.
Wow, their line is 7. I'm gonna take the under as a lock on this one. This is lock number 1 of 2.
Oh, you got to do a lock on the team that drafted a running back number 2 overall. Well done. way to build that brand.
7. Their quarterback is Eli Manning still. That's crazy.
It sure is. I am also taking it under here.
I was going to do the lock too for the under here. I mean, what is the argument for them getting to 7 wins?
Odell Beckham's back.
I mean, I guess Odell Beckham's back. There's that.
He is back. I mean, they did win, what, 10 games 2 years ago?
Wow. It really feels like this is the bettors are giving 4 wins to Saquon Barkley, though.
I don't know about 4 wins. That's I mean, first off, I don't think their line would be 3 again coming into this season. Nobody has a line lower than 6. So that would be pretty impressive. Or Buffalo's at 5.5? No, Buffalo's at 5.5. So that would be pretty impressive if you think their roster is 3 wins bad.
Okay, I'm going under, though. Lock it in.
New York Jets with a line of 6 wins.
I'll take the over just because that's pretty low, and I think I took the over on every team in this division except Buffalo, which is probably not going to work out for me, but I'm going to do it anyway.
What do we know about Jermaine Kearse's health? We fear he's going to miss the season opener, so we got to make sure we get Kearse back on the field. But that being the case, assuming that this is not a long-term injury, I also am taking the over.
Definitely over on the Jets. Definitely like the Sam Darnold pick for them. And the rolling with Darnold going into the season opener. I believe in Todd Bowles. I think he's going to win Coach of the Year this year.
Wow. That's a take. I like that. All right. The Oakland Raiders, with a line of 7.5 wins that come bumped down a half win after the Khalil Mack trade.
I would have taken the under no matter whether Khalil Mack was on the team or not. Now that Mack is gone, I'm not sure if they have any good players on the team that are not offensive linemen. So if you have a bad quarterback and a bad defense, it's a lot to overcome. So I'm going to take the under.
I also am going to take the under.
Yeah, definite under. We can all do this as a lock also.
Okay. But the nice thing is I already had that bolded because you had Oakland as a lock for the under last year, which worked out.
There we go.
Yeah, so that was lock 2 of 2, just in case I forgot to mention. So Oakland and the Giants are the two stone locks here.
You two are in lockstep.
As fans of a team that is wont to make big, flashy trades, right, involving first-round picks, star names, what do each of you make of this Khalil Mack trade?
Yeah, we as fans of those teams, we know that they always don't work out. They never work out.
It's been kind of weird watching the Oakland media's reaction to this because, like, they really don't get it. They're like, I don't understand the timing. It seems like Oakland panicked. What are they doing? But if someone offers you two first round picks for a defensive player with 1 year left on his contract, like, you take the deal and run away before they change their minds. Like, it just seems crazy to me that this is something that people are thinking about. Like, one defensive player cannot really impact the game like a star quarterback or even probably a wide receiver. So if you can get two first round picks for that on a team that has no chance of contending anyway, then yeah, take the picks.
It feels so similar to, you know, I mean, obviously the price wasn't as high with the Sheldon Richardson trade, or if we go back to the trade, why am I blanking on the name? Oh, Percy Harvin. That was not actually what I was thinking of, though. I was thinking of the New England receiver.
Oh, Deion Branch.
Yeah, Deion Branch back in the day. Like, all of these trades, but you're so excited about them because of the fact that you're getting this proven player, and, oh, all you're giving up is a draft pick. Who's going to need that? But that turns out...
That's exactly what we were saying.
Turns out the draft always comes. I mean, unless you think that there's going to be some sort of apocalyptic event between now and April 2020, those first-round picks are going to occur, and they're going to be hugely valuable, and the Raiders, or the Bears, rather, aren't going to have them. The Raiders might waste them, but that's not going to help the Bears.
But first-round picks, sometimes they don't work out, so that means they aren't valuable.
Exactly.
It's interesting to think about, though, if the Seahawks hadn't made... Well, I mean, we don't know what would have happened on the field without Percy Harvin. We do probably know what would have happened on the field without Sheldon Richardson, because the team didn't make the playoffs anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
I mean, we found out a lot of how the Seahawks were going to do on the field without Percy Harvin when he didn't play the vast majority of that season. Granted, he made some key plays at times in the playoffs, but I think that we can safely say the Seahawks would have been better off not making the Percy Harvin trade.
That first-round pick that they gave up for Percy Harvin, would that player still be on their rookie deal in the last year of their rookie deal now? Or they'd be on their first contract?
I think they would be on their second contract by this point.
Yeah, the player drafted with that pick was Xavier Rhodes, right? And I think he got... Did he get an extension? I kind of think so. But he's a good cornerback. The Seahawks could use a player like that.
Yeah, we'd be thrilled to have Xavier Rhodes out there.
Yeah, he signed a 5-year, $70 million extension.
I mean, if we were talking about a cornerback tandem of Shaquille Griffin, granted, this is an alternate history, but a cornerback tandem of Shaquille Griffin and Xavier Rhodes instead of Shaquille Griffin and Deontay Johnson or whatever, I think that we'd be looking at the season differently, but also having that pick for Sheldon, if they had that this year, they'd have more draft capital, and they did excellent, as far as we know, so far without any of these players ever having played a regular season game in this draft, but imagine if they had even that much more draft capital, what we would look at the talent of the roster is like. And I think these things, long-term, you look at these trades and see teams 5, 6, 7 years down the road who get all the picks back as being pretty good teams because they're getting so many players. And the one thing that we know about the draft is that you need to take a lot of cracks at it.
I mean, I look at it from the other perspective. I actually, in some ways, think this is not necessarily a zero-sum trade. I actually think it's probably, in some ways, a lose-lose trade because I do think Oakland's management structure is bad enough that they're not likely to take full advantage of these draft picks. But at the same, and like, I think the process here probably was not very good. or AJ McCarron. I think of like Atlanta's roster and how top heavy it's been after the Julio Jones trade because of the fact that they lost so many mid round picks. I would say it wasn't even necessarily, you know, first round picks that they gave up, but they had very limited depth. So some years when they stayed healthy, they'd be great. But other years when they had injury, they just had no way to compensate for that.
Yep. And yeah, for the Seahawks recently, that the second and the third for Dwayne Brown, who's a really good player, there's still that draft capital is missing.
Yes, it is. But hey, at least they got those six games of Jeremy Lin.
Too soon. We have a new number 20 on the Seahawks now.
Oh, God. But this is the last point. You talk about this a lot with college draft classes, that if you miss, in basketball in particular, if you miss on a draft class, or on a recruiting class, on a college recruiting class, if you miss on a recruiting class, it can leave your team pretty devoid of talent for years beyond that.
Because you end up chasing it.
And I think that's kind of what happened with the Seahawks, that they kind of lost a couple of drafts in there because of trading. Maybe they missed some picks or whatever. And I think that's one of the main reasons that the roster doesn't seem like it's as full of talent as it could.
Agreed.
Yep. During the press conference last night, John Gruden was talking about how the last few drafts of theirs have really not returned anything, basically throwing their GM under the bus and then saying that's why they have such an old roster is because their drafts have been so bad, as if they didn't consciously make all these decisions of signing super old players over the offseason. Anyway.
Maybe some turmoil in that front office. That just seems like it. Okay, let's resume with the Philadelphia Eagles, the reigning NFL champions, Super Bowl champions, won 13 games last year, a line of 10.5 this year.
They're a good team, but 10.5 coupled with Carson Wentz probably not being 100% yet and being unclear when he'll actually return to the field, I'm going to take the under.
Me too. Football Outsiders projecting them for just 9.1 wins.
Huh. Going over for the Eagles, I just don't see how, like, the NFC East is pretty bad overall, and I think they'll end up again being the team that kind of rises from the NFC East.
Pittsburgh Steelers, their cross-state rivals, also their derby rivals, also with a line of 10.5 wins.
Yeah, Washington and Oregon aren't even the same state, and even that's a derby, so Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. <There you go. laughs> I think the Eagles are probably a better team than the Steelers, but the Steelers play in the junior conference in the NFL, so I'm going to take the over for them.
I have some concerns here in terms of their top heaviness and, you know, what kind of Le'Veon Bell we're going to get this year in a walk year, but I also am taking the over.
Le'Veon Bell also hasn't officially even reported to the team.
There is that particular matter.
Which, having drafted him first overall in fantasy, I was not that thrilled to see. But at the same time, I think they could have an average season to get to 11 wins.
The San Francisco 49ers with a line of 8.5 wins, one that has been moved downward and still heavy action on the under here at 8.5 wins.
Yeah, 8.5 is pretty crazy. To get a winning record in the NFC, you have to be a really, really good team. And even if Jimmy Garoppolo is really good, their defense was atrocious last year and he's not going to be playing defense, and I don't see where improvement's going to come from unless Richard Sherman is somehow comes back and is very good. So I will take the under on them.
I'm going to take the under and make this my second lock.
Wow, another lock.
You've done three of them.
It would make me nervous to have a lock with a team in the Seahawks division.
That's fair.
The chance for it to blow up in your face.
Oh, I mean, definitely has the chance. I
lock somebody else over.
Okay, that's reasonable.
Has Football Outsiders done research on teams who had strong finishes to one season, how they fared going into the next season?
I don't think it came up in their chapter. A lot of the chapter was looking at quarterbacks who were very, very good in pretty small samples, like Jimmy Garoppolo, how they did in subsequent seasons. And the list of quarterbacks was, like, people who have done it, there's some good players in there and then some like not amazing players. So Garoppolo being amazing in six games does not mean that he's going to be a superstar. Someone else on the list was Colin Kaepernick in 2012. And
oh, interesting.
He had a good 2013 season, but he wasn't like a superstar or anything. Right. The weird thing, I think there were nine quarterbacks and five of them were 49ers. So there was Garoppolo, Kaepernick, Tim Rattay, and then a couple of other players that I can't remember. And none of them are really like superstar household names. So if this is a small sample, but if Garoppolo turns out to be some otherworldly quarterback, it would be kind of an aberration.
Here's the full list. Deshaun Watson, who, of course, the jury is very much in the same way. Yep. Mark Bolger. Paul Justin with the Indianapolis Colts in 1996, and I do not recall this person existed at all.
Yeah.
And the other two Niners were Elvis Gerbach and Steve Bono, and the last player, John, is that an R? Furcod? With the 1989 New Orleans Saints, and that is definitely way before my time following football.
I guess that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
We hope that Jimmy G goes the way of Tim Rattay, I suppose. I'll give this an under also, though.
Okay, the Seattle Seahawks with a line of 7.5 wins.
That's pretty low. When I was first looking at offseason projections, I think their line was 8.5, and I was, if I had to bet on that, I would have taken the under, but 7.5 is pretty low with a quarterback as good as Russell Wilson, so I'm going to take the over on that.
Same here.
I'm definitely going to go over. I mean, we've talked extensively about the Seahawks, but just as far as a standings standpoint, there are people who look at it and say that the Seahawks got to 9-7 last year, had a pretty bad offensive line in general, had tons of injuries on the defense, had a kicker who missed a couple of important kicks along the way that may have swung games. I don't know if I would just look at those things as being better and say the team will be better, because there are a lot of losses over the offseason, but I think getting to 9 wins is not, they're not, it's not going to be that incredibly difficult.
I mean, I think their record mostly is, you know, you look at the bell curve of their record, the heart of it is going to be between 7 and 9 wins, and of those, 8 wins and 9 wins both to hit the over here. So I think that's the simplest logic here.
Yep.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 6.5.
It's a pretty low total, but they're also by far the worst team in their division. Probably their quarterback is suspended for part of the season, and they play in the NFC, which is really hard. So wins aren't easy to come by. So I'm going to take the under on them.
That all checks out.
Yeah, definitely under.
I mean, Football Outsiders does have them at 7 wins, so it's not maybe as definite an under as I think, you know, we've kind of implied.
If that was from the Almanac, that was probably from before the suspension.
Yeah, let me see if I can look that up.
How many games is Jameis Winston? He's suspended for 3 games?
This does appear to have the 3-game suspension.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So just, I guess, regression in the mean for them. You know, this is a team that was considered a trendy breakout pick this time a year ago.
As is tradition.
Yes, good point. They were on Hard Knocks last year. That was all last year, right? Yeah.
So there's this running joke from back when Robert Mays and Bill Barnwell both used to write for Grantland, and the Buccaneers would be their breakout team every single year, and it hasn't quite happened yet, but one day maybe.
I don't think anyone's calling them the breakout team this year. I have not seen that one time this year. The Tennessee Titans with a line of 8 wins.
I'm going to take the under. I don't really know what they're supposed to be good at. So their division isn't amazing, but I just can't bank on them going more than 8 wins.
I would say they're good at not running the exotic smash-mouth anymore. That would be...
That's fair.
The Titans, I think, have to be the most average team in the NFL. Their line is for 8 wins. There's even action on both sides. And their Football Outsiders projection is for 8.0 wins. Like, they could not be a more 500 team on paper. But because of the fact that I have taken more unders than overs, I am therefore taking the over here to balance that out.
Tough team. You were saying, Ben, you don't know what they're good at. You also don't necessarily know what they're bad at. But I just have no feel for that team at all, even what they're going to do or what they're going to look like. I think probably going to say under for Tennessee.
We wrap things up with the Washington professional football team with a line of 7 wins, precisely the same number they won last season with Kirk Cousins at the helm.
Now, this is hard for me because I live in D.C., and whenever I listen to the radio here, it's hard not to become convinced that they're going to go 16-0. So I have to divorce myself from that. And 7's pretty low. I think I took the under on 2 teams in their division already, so I'll take the over here. But there's not a ton to like about their team other than Paul Richardson, who is actually good.
You like Alex Smith?
I love Alex Smith.
I'm taking the over here. I mean, it's solid 7.8 projection from Football Outsiders. I think this team has 8-8 written all over it.
Yep. Do you guys think Alex Smith is a better quarterback than Kirk Cousins?
Yes. Really tough because Alex Smith was playing with Andy Reid for a long time and a pretty good offense. So we don't really know, but I think in a vacuum, I would prefer to have Alex Smith versus Kirk.
I mean, I think they're pretty close. What do you think their line would be? If you think their line would be different if they had Kirk Cousins?
No, I don't really have strong feelings. I was just curious. I think in a vacuum, I would probably rather have Kirk Cousins. Alex Smith had one really, really good year last year, and it was like an amazing situation for a quarterback to be in. So it'll be interesting to see whether that translates to Washington and for Kirk Cousins, how he does in Minnesota.
I'm going over for this one. Is there any reason, though, talking about Alex Smith, I mean, kind of the quarterbacks involved in this movement that happened? You have Alex Smith going from the AFC to the NFC, Kirk Cousins staying in the NFC. The only one who's moved to the AFC is Case Keenum, who is quite unknown at this point. Why do you feel like the NFC has become such a dominant conference?
That's a good question. So a lot of the biggest markets are in the NFC, and in a league with a hard salary cap, that shouldn't really matter, but it kind of feels like it does, and I don't really know why.
I mean, I would say I feel like a lot of it is probably coaching, right? Don't you feel like there's stronger coaching in the NFC at this point?
But why?
I don't know.
I mean, I guess maybe seen this from the NBA, because the NBA, it's not true about markets. The Western Conference probably has some of the smaller markets.
I think it's actually in some ways the opposite, that those teams have had to be more creative, you know, whereas the big market East Coast teams could like try to rely on that, like the Knicks have for the last 5 decades. Okay, last 4 decades. I mean, they were good in the early 70s. Kevin Durant's coming back there. Rich Kleiman's going to make it happen.
So a lot of the NFC being better is just they happen to have quarterbacks that are a lot better, and maybe that's just randomness, like Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Carson Wentz before he got hurt. Like if you pulled up the top 10 QBR quarterbacks in 2017, it would be heavily dominated by NFC. Now there's the question of how much of that is due to coaching, and that's pretty hard to answer, but if you have better quarterback play, then you're probably going to have a better team on average. But as to why that happened, that's a good question.
I'm disappointed you didn't throw Dak into that list. You're better than that.
Yeah, I bet if hypothetically speaking, one of us worked for ESPN, I bet they could pull multi-year queries of QBR. And if you looked at 2016 and 2017 combined, I bet Dak would be like top 3 in QBR.
I would assume so. I have no idea how to actually do that. If I ever needed that done, I would just ask Bardmo.
Yeah, I would ask someone else too.
Bardmo has access to the real ESPN stats.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I could if I really wanted to bad enough get into them, but I have not tried to at this point. So there you go.
Well, it's an interesting and unfortunate happenstance.
Well, I look forward to coming back and reviewing these this year and seeing, Ben, if you destroyed us as thoroughly as Danny did a year ago.
Lock number 3, I will not beat Danny's record.
On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.